The way you do it is the way that you use, you know, the seventh and eighth branches of the Eightfold Path. You use combination of mindfulness and samadhi. And samadhi being one-pointedness, mindfulness being like vipassana, you know, scanning, lakthong, you know, it's discursive meditation. And what do I mean by that? You put your samadhi on the idea that Buddha is in you. So you're already there. And when you get there, this is my consolation prize. What I call it, what I developed for myself. I awarded it to myself. And that's to console me for being a loser of after 54 years of studying Buddhism, 56 years of studying Buddhism, no more, 60 years of studying Buddhism, I still didn't attain nirvana. But my consolation is, that's because I'm still trapped in time. And which is a horrible place to be, trying to be in the moment when there is no moment. It's just past meeting future. Like that, the moment is like has no duration, really. So you can never get there. You keep trying to step in there and it's not there. Anyway, I'm sorry. So point is, when I get nirvana in some future life, I am going to realize I was always in nirvana. That's why Buddha was able to remember infinite previous lives two steps before nirvana under the tree. Remember, he remembered all his previous lives. Why didn't he remember them before that? Because we don't want to remember where we thought we were suffering. But when you get nirvana, time collapses and you're free at all time. And you realize that the uncreated, you were always in the uncreated, because the uncreated is all this mess. That's what it is. And he realized that he'd always been there and had not realized it. He'd had always had the Buddha nature was always him. And so that's what we will do. So the point is, I'm not in nirvana now, and we are not, I presume, here. And maybe some of you are, actually, I'm not sure. But the point is, when we get to nirvana, we'll realize we are in nirvana now. And we'll revise our experience of where we are now, such as to realize it's really enjoyable, even on Zoom. It's blissful. It's made of bliss, the whole thing. So, but what, I'm sorry, I'm just indulging in that. But what I'm saying to the depression thing is this, you put your one point on Buddha's good news that nirvana is everywhere. It's the reality of everything. So in reality, if you only knew fully what you know deeply, what your cells know, let's say, your subatomic particles or your subatomic energy, subparticulate energy knows, is that everything is fine. You're in the flow. But you then use your mindfulness to find the narrative in your mind that's telling you, oh no, Bob, this really sucks. Oh, you did such a bad thing yesterday. Oh, you have such bad thoughts. Oh, no. Oh, hell. Oh, God, the Republicans will win again somehow. Oh, oh, no. Oh, they're still in there. Oh, Mitch McConnell is still there. It's like, you know, now, et cetera. In other words, all these negative things will come in your mind because that's what you're conditioned. You've been terrorized by your culture to think everything is awful, that reality sucks. And you should be scared, and being sensible is to be resigned to it and scared of it and defend yourself and hide and escape from it even. And you have to review those things and then bring to bear. Then you have to learn more in between meditating and keep reading and create a new narrative. Read the Sublime Continuum. Read all those wonderful books of Zadas Buddha nature, the beautiful books, all those retranslations of all the Maitreya books, they're just beautiful. Brunholzl, those guys, they're hyperactive, those guys. I don't know how they publish and write so many things with so many footnotes. It's fantastic. And you have to read them and read them and read them. That's meditating. That's vipassana, is reading them, because that's creating a new narrative for you. And in the new narrative, everything is fine. And then you begin to, the new narrative gradually replaces the old narrative. Reasonably, it gives you reasons. and you begin to see the holes in the old narrative. For example, it takes a long time. You know, I argued for years with people in the natural sciences about their nihilism. Nah, there's no future life. That's ridiculous. Bob, come on, what's your evidence? They all go sneering around like that contemptuously. And then you say, well, there is evidence, and then they dismiss it. Oh, that's just religious fanatics, superstition, blah, blah, blah. They go like that. And then it took me 40 years to realize there's one overwhelming argument against them, which is, which one of you guys discovered the nothing? Who got the Nobel Prize for the discovery of nothing that waits for you at death? Which person? Who? Just tell me. Or maybe was it Descartes? Or who discovered nothing? Newton? Did he discover it? Einstein? And of course, they can't really point to anybody, because obviously nobody is ever going to discover nothing except an insane person, because nothing is nothing. But, you know, to really figure out that what that means frees you from fear of nothing, or from fear of, and then the whole idea that God, in this Western, you know, monotheistic culture, that God is all powerful and loves you like a son, like a daughter. But then it's got eternal hell waiting for you in case you had a little fun, went to a rock concert or something, or took a drug, or I don't know what, danced. That your hell is waiting. I mean, that's just so demented. Why should you believe that? So you absolutely should not. So depression has to do with you're telling yourself that everything is horrible, and you have to retell it. And you read Eckhart Tolle. You know, he was about to kill himself, and suddenly he heard another voice, which was his samadhi voice, that said, but moved into mindfulness, vipassana. And it said, vipassana, and it said, why are you listening to me, to that voice that tells you everything sucks? How do you know that? Don't listen to it. A different voice of himself. He found another voice, a saving voice. And he didn't kill himself. And he became Oprah's guru. And he's a great guy. He's really nice.